We're exploring a new biography on Vice President Mike Pence here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for being here. As the House's impeachment inquiry swirls on Capitol Hill, the vice president has managed to stay above the fray. But earlier this week, when Pence visited an Iowa farm, reporters, they just peppered him with questions, and he defended President Trump's call with the Ukrainian leader.
The American people need look no further than the plain reading of the transcript in the president's call with President Zelensky, and they will see there was no pressure, there was no quid pro quo.
Pence is crisscrossing the country, taking aim at Democrats in districts President Trump won in 2016. He'll be in Wisconsin Thursday. This is a snapshot of Pence's life today, and we're going to go back decades. What do you think of the vice president? What do you want to know about his power in the Oval Office? We're at 800-642-1234. Political reporter Tom LoBianco has covered Mike Pence for almost a decade. He's been a White House reporter at the Associated Press covering the Trump-Russia investigations. His new book is called Piety and Power, Mike Pence and the Taking of the White House. Tom, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So take us to the scene setter of your biography and Mike Pence, who is sitting in the Oval Office with advisors. And you're really kind of getting into the head of Vice President Mike Pence. What is going on with his aspirations?
Yeah, you know, when we wrote this opening, it's kind of a imagining of what it would look like if Pence takes the White House. And we wrote that before, well before this impeachment debate started, the current one at least. It's quiet, a very tight political circle, and it's the type of thing where you'd only see a very few close advisors around him, people like Mark Short and Josh Pidcock, people who've been around him for a very long time. And I make the point in there at the opening that, you know, here he is in the Oval Office. You can pretty much bet there will be a faux antique cherry red phone at the top left corner of the Resolute desk or whatever desk he picks for the Oval Office. And
You're breaking up
the direct line from Karen Pence, because that's you got me.
Yeah, Tommy, yeah, okay. You're breaking up a little bit there, right?
And
you
were there. We go. Okay, back there.
That is better. Well, and you know, in that sense, though, and we're going to get to Karen in a little bit here, but for your biography, you weren't able to interview Mike Pence, and you had to go to many other people around in his circles. But you had a conversation with him once back in 2014 about his political goals. What happened there?
So this was back when he was in the State House. And, you know, the vice president will not speak with anyone. There have been a few books written about him, he won't speak to anybody who writes about him directly. And that's one part survival tactic inside the Trump White House. But I also suspect it's about his own stealth candidacy for the White House. In 2014, I was covering him at the State House. And I asked, I said, hey, hold on. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Hey, we love kids. I've got a whole mess of kids of my own. So you just be A-okay with that, because
we're good. In 2014, I'm covering the State House, and Pence is spending a lot of time out in Manhattan and D.C. outside of Indiana, and he's just fundraising all the time. And we're seeing these stories crop up where he's, you know, a dark horse candidate for president. I guess, which was kind of surprising to those of us in the State House press corps at the time, because he didn't seem like a serious contender for the White House. So I remember I walked up to him up on the second floor of the State House and asked him one day, I said, Mr. Governor, it kind of looks like you're running for president. And are you running for president? And he says, in his Mike Pence voice, he says, Tom, it's the great honor of my life to serve the people of Indiana as their governor. And I was like, okay, well,
full stop.
Yeah, right. And I was like, okay, so you know, try it again. And he does what he always does. He gives the same answers. Tom, it is the great honor of my life to serve the people of Indiana as their governor. And so I do the Sherman version, right? The General Sherman question, you know, if called on to serve, would you, you know, would you refuse? Right. And he's like, same answer. So then, you know what? I was like, I was thinking to myself, I was like, man, this isn't working. I mean, this guy is a semantic killer, right? Like, you're never going to get anything out of him this way. So I looked him dead in the eye and I said, you are running for president, aren't you? And he got flush red in the face and then gave the exact same answer.
Oh, my goodness. How uncomfortable for but being a persistent reporter you are. We're talking with Tom LoBianco. He is the author of a new book on Mike Pence. It's called Piety and Power. He's been covering Mike Pence since 2011. What questions do you have about the vice president's rise in politics through the decades, his Indiana roots, his faith journey, and how that informs his politics? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. You know, as we watch the impeachment inquiry, there have always been the questions around if Mike Pence would step in, what would that look like? And so it seems like this particular vice president has had a more higher profile for Republicans. Could that profile of him, could that be detrimental to him in the long run?
Well, you know, I've gotten this question before, and I think it's quite the tightrope for him politically, because remember this, I mean, their strategy walking into this was that they would only be stuck with Trump for 4 months when they made this initial decision. And one of the reasons that we do know this is because at the end of 2016, toward the end of the 2016 election, his folks were already going around to donors like the Uline family and starting to line them up for a 2020 run. So the game plan was, you know, they were telling people, look, get on board early with Pence and, you know, you'll have a front seat, you know, seat at the table for when he does eventually become the Republican nominee in 2020. So that was the idea. And look, a lot of this is built on that Trump has such a firm hold on the Republican base of voters at this moment. Now, you know, can he wash that off if it becomes, you know, attached with impeachment? I don't know that he wants to, because I think the thing is that you know, look, running for president for anyone in any party is functionally, you start in the primaries. You have to win the nomination, and then you move to the general. And increasingly in this country, we see this in the Democratic primary now too. I mean, you know, look at people like Elizabeth Warren, for instance. Like I can remember back to 2004, where you know Dennis Kucinich was, you know, so far to the left that nobody took him seriously. But you know, now you know half of the pack is to the left of where Kucinich was on a lot of items. You see a bifurcation in the country right now. So, to the point of Pence, you know, he has to have that Trump base of voters. And I'm not even sure he would want to wash that off, you know, at the end of it, because, you know, functionally, it's politically good for him in the long run.
We're talking with political journalist Tom LoBianco, whose new biography of Vice President Mike Pence, it helps build a fuller picture around political ambitions, the religious journey. The book is called Piety and Power. What do you think of Mike Pence's public pronouncements of his faith? What are your questions about his role in the White House and his relationship to President Trump? Be part of the conversation at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about the new biography about Vice President Mike Pence. It's called Piety and Power. The book is based on interviews with more than 100 people around Pence throughout his life. And we're learning about how Pence's upbringing and early years, they inform who we see today and how he came to attach himself to President Trump. Do you remember Mike Pence before he was a vice president? Were you surprised when he became President Trump's pick? How do you view their dynamic in the West Wing? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. And Tom LoBianco stays with us for the hour. Tom, take us into the relationship, if you would, between Vice President Pence and President Trump. What is that relationship like?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of, as it stands now, warm but kind of aloof. It's not very close. It's certainly not the kind of the bromance that you had between Biden and Obama over 8 years. And we've seen that. I wrote about this after the book finished. I wrote a story for Yahoo News about how Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump were thinking about replacing Mike Pence on the ticket in 2020. And you know, I should mention they deny that. But it's never been a particularly close relationship. And one of the things that I point out in the book, and this is really key to understanding this, you know, the sort of the Kellyanne Conway version of events is that they, you know, they have a very close relationship. They hit it off. Everything is great. But that runs counter to my reporting, because the person who Trump was close with in Indiana is actually another casino magnate. It's a guy named Stephen Hilbert, and he was a former head of Conseco Insurance. Hilbert is quite the colorful character. He met his third wife when she popped out of a papier-mâché cake topless. And that was at the bachelor party for his stepson from the second marriage. And Hilbert is the one who ultimately connects Trump with Pence in 2016. He sends a text message to Pence asking him if he would like to be considered as running mate. You know, Pence and Trump have never particularly hit it off. But for Pence, at least, it's unflinchingly loyal. And, you know, again, that goes back to the politics of it, because he can't be seen in any way crossing Trump, because then he might kill his own future prospects.
Pence, you define as a political chameleon who has really can blend in and switch gears a little bit with his style and, you know, how he views even his own politics. What makes him able to be that way and also stand out, but also be in the background at the same time?
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? You know, Pence never came to politics naturally. It doesn't run in his family. And it's not.
His father was in the military.
Yeah, that's right. And he was a regional oil salesman down in southern Indiana, down in the Ohio River Valley. And Pence is the only one who really gets active. He kind of comes to it the same way. This is so funny, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but it kind of makes sense. If you look at Bill Clinton, Bill Clinton had the raw talent in the pairing between him and Hillary, and it's almost like you never had to work at it. But Hillary always had to work at it. Pence is more like Hillary Clinton in this regard. Now, obviously, quite a few other differences between them, but he had to work at it to become a politician. And I think this is where some of this shape-shifting comes from, is sort of how he changes and moves with the tide. Remember, and I didn't realize this before I started working on the book, he actually trains in 1987 at Newt Gingrich's old campaign school, which is basically it's the old GOPAC of the late 80s and the early 90s. It's a training ground for lots of conservative Republicans. Eventually, it lays the pipeline for what will become the Gingrich Revolution in 1994. And he trains as a foot soldier in that world. And what you see is he starts out as basically dyed-in-the-wool Republican foot soldier, like a party guy. He changes to become a Pat Buchanan guy in the early 90s. He changes again later to become more of a Christian right culture warrior. He goes to Washington. He kind of lives on the far right of the party, I guess what you would consider to be the House Freedom Caucus right now. Mm-hmm. But he does shift back into the leadership under the wing of John Boehner then in 2008. But then he also kind of takes on a Tea Party persona from 2009 to 2010. He moves back to Indiana to run for governor. His advisors tell him that Tea Party and Social Crusade are not really working with the voters in this moment, so maybe he ought to drop that. So he does, and he starts running as a Mitch Daniels-style Republican technocrat, and he kind of drops all the social issues. The fascinating thing for me, at least, to watch him with Trump was that Trump was so chaotic and moving so fast that Pence never had a chance to make a gradual change. I mean, he starts flipping on issues on a dime. And I think the best example really was free trade. In July of 2016, he starts out as a free trade supporter. And by the end of it, he's supporting Trump in the, more isolationist / fair trade style policies. It was really kind of jarring, actually.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Tom LoBianco, author of a new book on Mike Pence. It's called Piety and Power. And his book, it fills around the edges on the behind-the-scenes politician and his rise in politics. What do you think of Vice President Mike Pence's accomplishments? Do you see his role as being there to support the president? What are your thoughts on his very public faith? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Diane now joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Diane.
Hi, good morning. I'm enjoying the interview very much, and we'll get the book. My question is, I'd like to know a little bit more about Mike Pence's wife, how they met, how long they've been married. Did she influence his faith decisions? And just a little bit more about her. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Diane. What kind of power does Karen Pence have in the vice president's political decisions?
Yeah, thanks, Diane. That's a hugely important question. I mean, she is super important in a way that I did not appreciate when I was covering him daily. But when I pulled back to do the research for this book, I started to see her hand more. And you see it in all facets of his life. You know, what's funny is you can also trace his own faith conversion based on the events in their lives, because he says he has his salvation experience, his born-again experience in 1978, but he meets her at a liberal Catholic church in Indianapolis, St. Thomas Aquinas, back in 1983. And they get married in the Catholic church, 1985. She's hugely important in all facets of his life, on the politics. And I think this is something that I'm not sure it took me a second to grab. I'll just put it this way. When she refused to kiss him on election night in 2016, she says, you got what you wanted, Michael, now leave me alone. And it's a very dramatic moment there that, you would think that they just won. They just won the White House with the Trumps, so they'd be happy. Initially, I read that as her being angry at Trump, because that's what you would hear from a lot of people around them, that she's not very fond of his style of things. She doesn't like a philanderer. But what it later, as I reported this out more and I understood her role in Pence's world more, I think she was really angry at Mike Pence himself, because what he had done by taking a risk of spending 4 months with Trump, with the promise that Trump would lose, and then they would be catapult to the front of the 2020 pack for the nomination, that gamble blew up in their face, because now they were going to be stuck with Trump for 4 years. And now it would be hard to wash off things like supporting him in they didn't know it at the time, but the Stormy Daniels, and that came out. Karen McDougal from Maryville, Indiana, up near Chicago, and that comes out because she knew that he would be carrying the water for him. So don't underestimate Karen Pence's political acumen, because remember, they develop it together. I think that one of the things you see with the Pences is that these caricatures that are out there of them, him as a flaming theocrat and her as kind of like a shrew and a schoolmarm who's, rapping people on the knuckles with the rulers and the, moralist. I think they like those caricatures. I've had their friends tell me that too, that it helps them politically. Because among other things, it masks their own political cunning and strategy. And so I don't ever underestimate her.
And she had a direct line to him. They had their own phone call, their own telephones, I understand.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Early in 2001, he finally wins for Congress. He lost his first two races for Congress. You know, this is interesting. 1988, when he runs the first time, Dick Armey, Texas conservative Texas Republican, he's just a backbencher in that moment, supports the Democrat running against against Mike Pence, a man named Phil Sharp. But by 2001, Pence goes there. Dick Armey is supporting Pence, and he tells him, get a phone line just for your family. So Dick Armey is the one who actually gets him this red phone, or tells him to get the phone. And Karen buys it, and that's the direct line between them.
Talking about the new biography of Mike Pence, tracing his political career, his deep faith in God, you can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this conversation right after a news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about a new biography out on Vice President Mike Pence. We're spending the hour on it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And the book is called Piety and Power, Mike Pence and the Taking of the White House. This biography, well over 300 pages, and it really sits squarely at the intersection of faith and politics. Journalist Tom LoBianco writes about Pence. He reads the Bible, still marks it up with a highlighter, attends church as often as he can, prays before meetings, and consults God routinely. So what do you make of his demeanor and how he stays in the background? What about his outward faith? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. And biographer Tom LoBianco is here with us through the hour. Tom, take us back to his radio hosting days. And we actually have some sound of that from 1997. He is a conservative talk show host in Indiana, and he's criticizing here politicians for not taking an Air Force scandal seriously enough. Kelly Flynn, who was the first female B-52 pilot, she's resigned after having an affair. And here's that moment in his show.
Mike Pence!
Call with your take on it. Was justice served in the case of Kelly Flynn? Is adultery no longer a big deal in Indiana and in America? And just love to know your thoughts, because I for one, believe that the seventh commandment contained in the Ten Commandments is still a big deal.
As you hear that bit from his show, what are you thinking about his talk show hosting days?
Oh, man. You know, well, let me just talk about the substance of that for a second, because as I was driving through his hometown, Columbus, Indiana, with a source and an old neighbor. And he was asking me what kind of scandals I'd found on Mike Pence. He was looking for the sexy stuff. And, you know, it kind of threw up my hands. I was like, well, that's Mike Pence. There's nothing. This guy's boring, right? You know, there's no live bodies. There's no dead bodies. There's no money, you know, getting laundered through the Cayman Islands or anything. Like, it just nothing, right? And then I stopped to think about it, and I think, I don't know if it's a scandal per se, but I think the shock is the thing right in front of our noses, because the guy who said in 1997 that adultery is a big deal is supporting Trump. And it's not just that, you know, it was with, when they did the tax cuts. I mean, Pence, you know, was always pretty good about limiting spending, sort of the opposite of where W. Bush and Reagan had been in terms of cutting and then increasing spending. But then when it comes to the tax, when they do the tax cuts, I think we're almost like $1 trillion deficits now on the, each year or something like that.
Yeah.
That was the most surprising thing. And when you played that clip, that was the first thing that jumped out at me. To your question on the radio.
But he's also able to really hear from the electorate in Indiana through this talk show.
Yes, that's absolutely right. That's where a lot of people pointed out politically that it developed his name recognition for a return in politics. And that's true. But I think the thing that that we didn't see or was not immediately clear was that he got a great sense of the pulse of the state. So his show is actually not on in Indianapolis. It's not on in the big market. They brought it overnight from like midnight at that point in the 90s, from like midnight to 3 a.m. But his show is on in places like Richmond, Indiana, Shelbyville, Indiana, and down in Columbus, Indiana. All these like the auto parts towns that are feeder towns into Indy, and small, mid-sized towns. And what he does, he's taking phone calls. I talked with his old radio host, Dan Jensen. He made a really good point. He said whenever they wanted to light up the boards, they would talk about Bobby Knight or class basketball, which was
right. That I can see how that would be true. Yeah, carry on.
Right. He actually, Pence would try to get into politics sometimes, and like this stuff would land flat. It wouldn't, it wouldn't light up the boards. And so one day he tells his producer, Dan, he says, Dan, if I ever want to talk about some big Washington issue again, just tell me to put a sock in it. So Dan Jensen shows up the next day with an old athletic sock and it's got a hole in the bottom of it. And he tacks it to the wall so Pence can see it through the studio glass, a reminder that he's always ready to put a sock in it.
Take us back to, and we really breeze through it, the technocrat Mike Pence. You know, after a dozen years in Congress, Mike Pence goes back to Indiana to run for governor, and we see a shift in his political views again. What were the changes you saw from his time in Capitol Hill, then coming back to Indiana?
You know, when we were covering him, everyone was telling me, when we were covering that governor's race, everyone was telling me, oh, Mike Pence is a Tea Party or he's a social crusader. And this is right when I'm really starting to seriously cover him and get to understand him. And it was just kind of jarring for me because I didn't see that. When I would see him day to day, he would talk about, economic development, jobs, education. I mean, he was trying to continue the Mitch Daniels playbook, which is a very conservative and quite aggressive conservative style. But it didn't really get into the abortion stuff and the gay marriage and, the hot button social issues. And finally, we were at an event in Marion University back in August of 2012. And one of the reporters asked him, he says, okay, so, Congressman, what will you do if you get a bill on your desk that's going to limit the term in which women can have an abortion and, reduce the number of weeks? It's not 6 weeks. I think it was like it was getting into like the first trimester. And he looks and he starts to answer it, but he's ducking a little bit too. Actually, not unlike that press gaggle from a few days ago.
On Wednesday, sure.
Yeah. He starts to answer. He says, I think most people know where I stand on this issue. I'm going to sign anything pro-life that lands on my desk. His press secretary cuts off the questioning and says that's it and that they won't be taking any questions that are off topic, quote unquote, which is, as a reporter, is ridiculous because everything is on topic. So the next day they start a new tactic. They stop telling us about campaign events so we can't show up to them, and they start advertising the events at the day after they've happened with like press releases that are written like news stories, photos of the events. It's like they just cut us out of the coverage. They were afraid. They were deeply afraid of talking about the social issues. And look, you kind of see that again when the big religious freedom battle, RFRA battle, comes up in 2015. He has an incredibly hard time dealing with that because he's trying to assuage his old political base, the Christian right, while also trying to line up new Republican mega donors, people like Paul Singer, whose son had come out just a few years earlier. Pence's, and this goes to the shapeshifter concept, which is that to win, he's always changing. And is that surprising? I mean, I remember when Marco Rubio used to be a Tea Partier. Ted Cruz stuck with the Tea Party thing, and Marco Rubio drops it. They all do it, but for Pence, I think it's a little more pronounced.
Talking with Tom Lobianco, author of the new book on Mike Pence, it's called Piety and Power. and he's been covering Mike Pence since 2011. Are you a fan of Mike Pence, or do you dislike him, or do you really not think much about him? What are your questions about his role in the White House? Still time for your questions at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Paris joining us from Muskego. Hi, Paris.
Hi.
What's your question?
Yeah, so I recently moved probably 3 or 4 years ago from Indianapolis to Wisconsin, and I was a resident in the anesthesia program there. And my question is, I know that Mike Pence had appointed Dr. Jerome Adams, who was an anesthesiologist that I worked with, as the state health commissioner, I think, for Indiana. And then he must have had a hand in appointing him as the Surgeon General for the United States. And I was just wondering if the author has any information or insight about that, about his relationship with Jerome Adams.
Paris, thanks for the call. Yeah. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know an awful lot directly about that appointment. But what I can tell you, he was involved in making sure that in getting Jerome Adams in as the Surgeon General. And a number of Hoosier political types did actually make out quite well in this administration. Seema Verma, who was a Mitch Daniels person and then kind of stuck around with Pence, becomes the head of CMS, Center for Medicaid, Medicare Services. Pence had problems with staffing. A lot of people didn't want to work with him because they liked Mitch Daniels. There was the old auditor, Dwayne Sawyer. They did not do a very good job vetting him. They appoint him, and then I think it was his wife or his ex-wife flies in from California and is like knocking on his door at the state house demanding unpaid child support. And then they get canceled, they remove him a couple days later. Pence had a tough time with staffing and like bringing people on. And part of this goes to his style of politics. It's such a close, very tight circle. It's not like Daniels. Even people like Alex Azar, who, was kind of close with Pence, the HHS secretary, but it was more of a Mitch Daniels guy. Mitch Daniels was the one that built that out, not Pence.
We're talking with veteran political reporter Tom Lobianco. Through the Hour, his new biography is called Piety and Power. Do you appreciate Mike Pence, the politician, or perhaps you dislike his stances on issues, or perhaps you don't really think much about him? What do you think about his faith in politics? Still time for your thoughts, your questions, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring the new biography of Vice President Mike Pence here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And 3 years ago this month, The Washington Post revealed a tape of Donald Trump bragging about abusing women. And author Tom Lobianco writes about the Access Hollywood tapes in the realm of Mike Pence's world and how he was reacting with his wife, Karen. The book is called Piety and Power. Still time for your questions at 800-642-1234. And Tom Lobianco stays with us through the hour. Let's go to Becky now, joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Becky.
Hi. Thank you so much for the show. I listen every morning.
Thanks, Becky.
I've been listening and just waiting for someone to call in to say what to me seems so obvious. The fact that Mike Pence claims to be a religious man, and then yet his politics, supports Trump for all of these things. You're supposed to treat your neighbors with respect, help those in need, no adultery, and so forth. It just seems to me like he says one thing, but he's living a completely different life.
Becky, thanks so much for getting into religion. Tom, this is a big chunk in your book as you really blend and dissect religion and politics.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, look, that's a great question. I get that question a lot. And, you know, I can tell you a lot of evangelicals, there's a sizable number of evangelicals who kind of left the Christian right movement over Trump in particular. And because of that, because they just couldn't square that, what you said, Becky. But Pence is still there. And I think, you know, this goes to the question of, look, the vice president's daughter, Charlotte, wrote an op-ed in the Washington Times, you know, accusing me of attacking faith everywhere. I mean, if you read the book, I think, and I hope that's not the case. But I do point out that, you know, Pence's faith is very real, but so is his ambition. And, you know, what I found in the reporting is a tug and pull between those two, and increasingly it looks like the ambition has taken over. Look, his folks use two ways of explaining this. The story of Daniel at Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel, the Jewish slave to the tyrant, the Persian king Nebuchadnezzar, is there to keep his people safe, put there by God. And then the other one is Joseph and the Pharaoh. Again, similar dynamic. Basically, you know, God works through Joseph to ensure that the tyrant is keeping things okay. That's the sort of the biblical allegories that his folks use to explain this. The secular version would be, you know, Pence is one of the people in there keeping things on track. You know, before he passed away, I asked Senator John McCain what he thought of that assessment, and he kind of laughed and he said, "Oh, I don't know. I guess it varies from day to day."
Hmm.
And I think that's true because it's, you know, that's the argument for Pence, or one of the key arguments for Pence, but it doesn't really hold, because look at where we are. I mean, we have Twitter diplomacy with these, you know, these gunfights on Twitter between, you know, with Kim Jong-un. You know, it hasn't changed anything. So that's the explanation. There are a lot of people like your caller, Becky, who don't see that. They don't believe that. I guess it's up to each individual person to make that decision.
Let's bring in Chris now, joining us from Mount Horeb. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I didn't hear Becky's comment because I was on with the screener, but, you know, from my standpoint, Pence is the, you know, the symbol of the evangelical alliance with Trump, where they have absolutely sold out on faith and values, honestly, in the quest for power, and Trump and Pence is absolutely the archetype of this. You know, you look at the faith, you look at things like the Sermon on the Mount, you look at Scripture, you look at the teachings of Jesus, and it's clear that Jesus would be horrified by. And I don't know how any Christian can look at the behavior, the demeanor. I mean, you look at what Trump was saying last night in Minneapolis at his rally. It's horrifying. And a Christian who is standing behind Trump has to reexamine their faith, has to go back to Scripture and really think about where their faith is at,
Chris,
and what their understanding is.
Yeah, Chris, thank you for the call. Tom, what do you hear there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, there's a guy who I interviewed, a reverend, who started out in the Christian right but eventually leaves that political movement over this, exactly what Chris was talking about. His name is Reverend Rob Schenck, S-C-H-E-N-C-K. And he talks about this extensively. You know, I asked him a question about Mike Pence, and I was trying to, because he used to pray with Pence in Congress. He used to hand out the Ten Commandment awards to congressmen, little small stone tablets that they would hang in their offices. And he would pray with Pence, and he would often notice that whenever Pence was talking about his faith, the Bible, he could look him square in the eye, and it was very direct. But whenever he was talking about his career, his ambition, he would look at the floor, his head down, look at the floor, like he was uncertain. And what he's noticed about Pence since then is that he says that Pence has a discipleship problem. He has not put his faith completely in Christ. And that secular Mike, the one with the ambition, is overtaking Christian Mike. And I saw that in my reporting too. You know, look, there's a lot of people, like Pence and Trump don't represent every evangelical, as you know, I think that Cal Thomas, who writes in his book Blinded by Might, makes the point. He's like, look, when the white conservative evangelicals and kind of the Southern Baptist style inspired by televangelists were coming on the scene in the 80s, it was a reaction to black evangelicals and the civil rights movement trying to retake that political arena away from them. People like Jesse Jackson. And I think that, and I try to do this, I try to be better about it. When we talk about evangelicals writ large, I don't think you can talk about that as a group because it's so wide and varied. And there are plenty of evangelical practitioners who don't like Trump, and they, to Chris and Becky's point, and they don't believe in what Trump is doing or how he is.
Well, let's fit in Mary now in Taylor Falls, Minnesota. Mary, hi.
Well, I appreciate the comments of the person that just spoke. I have very much the concerns that I have, and that is discerning the difference between faith and religion. It's one thing for faith to inform the way you live or do your politics, but it's very scary to think that you would have a religious leader trying to create a religious democracy or a religious government.
Yeah, and Mary, I think that you echo what Matt from Wausau emailed in to say that there needs to be a separation of church and state, and Mike Pence is a personification of that. You know, what do you make of that tug of war between political ambition and faith and religion and really conveying that through your meetings and who you are?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he enjoys the caricature of him as a theocrat, someone who would rule by religion, because that helps him politically. I don't know that he would. We saw that as governor. He's not an ideologue functionally, and I think that's actually damaging to him politically, because it would hurt him in that base. I mean, for the televangelist world, for like the Jerry Falwell Jr.'s, the Pat Robertson's, the John Hagee's, that type of world, that's what they want. That's their style. They want it ruled by their style of Christianity. I'm not entirely sure. When I looked at Pence's faith and his practice, I did not see that there. I asked one of his advisors, somebody who's worked with him over the years, I asked him about this, and he said, look, who doesn't pander? So he sees it as pandering to the Christian right.
Tom, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Tom Lobianco is the author of Piety and Power, Mike Pence and the Taking of the White House. He's a reporter who has covered Mike Pence for almost a decade. He also covered the Trump-Russia investigation for the Associated Press. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kay Darcher-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.